On this episode of The Flatus Show, number 59B, a Bible passage to confuse the Orthodox believer, and the second part of the interview with Joe G. from the Bebe podcast. This and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Hello, welcome to the Flatus Show. Well, you know, actually, since this is the second part of the same episode, you already know I opened up a tab can. There I am drinking it. You can hear me drinking the tab. Slurpily. Okay, so welcome to the Flatus Show, to the second half. Because this is mostly the Joe G. Joe G. interview, which is very, very fascinating guy. Extremely fascinating. Here, this is what Joe G has to say about this.
Yes, I heard that. I thought that was extremely fascinating.
And, okay. So let's say here. I was thinking about, I wanted to update about Israel from last week. I have a theory. Is that this is all the fault of the premillennial dispensationalists, because all that stuff started in, like, 1830. Lord Palmerston, in 1840, talked about a Jewish homeland. And the premillennial dispensationalists believe that Israel is going to be created before Christ can come back. I think it's contrived. The whole thing is contrived. What it was is that the British were on the side of the Ottoman Empire, right? Somebody, though, undermined the Ottoman Empire during World War I. They wanted to get rid of it so they could build the Jewish homeland in Palestine, because the Ottoman Empire didn't want to do it. And then created World War II to force the Jews of Europe to populate said area and therefore create the State of Israel. Of course, this is all conjecture, and I should probably be wearing some sort of crazy hat to protect me from the aliens invading my brain. But I was just thinking that. It's a little fantasy thinking. What do you think? It's Christian Zionism that's causing all this problem in the world. The premillennial dispensationalist. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Okay, I already mentioned all the new stuff on the previous one, so I'm just going to get on with the show. And I think that's it. Oh, yeah, next week I might talk about billionaires. And I don't know. I'll just talk about this right now. Billionaires. Do you think it's a mistake? Do you think it's a coincidence that billionaires of the world a lot of them control pharmaceutical, chemical companies? I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? These pharmaceutical companies, they control humanity, the environment of humanity, the chemicals in the very air, the fertilization, the fertilizer, the medication. It's all controlled by, only a few number of people, you know, these billionaire families. Of course, they're all public companies, but who the hell cares? I don't know. I guess right now I feel I'm a little bit conspiracy theorist thinking, but it's fun every once in a while to think outside the box. So, on with the show. And now, a Bible reading to confuse the Orthodox believer. Today's reading will be Matthew 8:28-34. And this is inspired by Nina Hagen. And I just bought a Nina Hagen CD, thanks to Mikey Pod, because he was talking about Nina Hagen. Nun Sex Monk Rock album. And I believe it's called Anti-World. That's where she talks about this. So I'm going to do the reading now. And when he came, And when he was come to the other side into the country of the Gadarenes, there met him two possessed with demons coming forth out of the tombs, exceeding fierce, so that no man could pass by that way. And behold, they cried out, saying,
What have we to do with thee, thou Son of God? Art thou come hither to torment us before the time?
Now there was afar off from them a herd of many swine feeding. And the demons besought him, saying,
If thou cast us out, send us away into the herd of swine.
And he said unto them,
Go.
And they came out and went into the swine, and behold, the whole herd rushed down the steep into the sea, and perished in the waters. And they that fed them fled, and went away into the city, and told everything, and what was befallen to them that were possessed with demons. Hold on. And they that fed them fled and went away into the city and told everything and what was befallen to them that were possessed with demons. And behold, all the city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they besought him that he would depart from their borders. Okay, we know that Jesus healed people, right? I mean, he spit in people's eyes and made them see and did all sorts of things, said, you're healed. And then we talked the last week about the soldier. It's, you know, have your own faith. It's the faith of the belief that brings these about. But here we have demons asking Jesus to help them. Because apparently the demons don't want to be in the humans, right? So they ask him, put us into the herd of swine, right? Which he does. And then they take the swine and drown themselves. So what's going on here? Another thing is pork is one of those forbidden foods to the Jewish people. And we are talking about, you know, Jewish people in this area, right? Maybe Gadarenes is not Jewish. But we'll have to find out that. Maybe it's, who knows? Well, I just thought the whole area was Jewish. I mean, isn't that what, you know, was supposed to be? This whole area was Jewish area. So anyway, so we have pigs there, right? So, but what are the pigs being raised for if Jews can't eat pork, you know? And I think there's a law now that no pig can be on Jewish soil. So the way pig farmers get around this in Israel is they build up like a layer. Like the pigs can't be on the land of Israel, but they can be on like a plank of wood. So they have these special places for the pigs to live in Israel. So, I mean, where'd that come from? It seems crazy. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I have a theory about this, but I'm not going to talk about it right now. I'll talk about it later. Because this goes on with Israel, too. It's like, maybe the Jews were eating pork at that time, the turn of the century. Like, when did they stop eating pork, maybe? Maybe they ate pork at that point, you know? They were raising pigs. So, anyway.
Do.
kind of school did you go to? Was it a religious school or like a public school or like a not a secular school? Or?
No, I went to a public school.
And what about college? Did you go to a religious college?
State school. I went to a state school, but the main reason why I chose it was because it was in the town where the church that I belonged to was located.
And you lived in an apartment away from home, or did you?
I did. I lived with other gentlemen from. They had lots of homes for teenagers and young adults who were a part of the church, so that they could live together in community.
Interesting.
I lived in a communal home.
Yeah, you know, Zillafag lived in a communal home as well. Voot. Yeah, I want to add something here, and I thought of this when Zillafag told me about his communal living. Doesn't it sound a little bit cultish, sort of like, you know, Reverend Jim Jones going to Guyana to create their little commune down there? And I don't know. Religion and communal living sounds cultish to me. It almost sounds like what the Catholic early, you know, like monasteries and stuff and nuns living in together. I mean, you know, for all of fundamentalism's criticism of the Pope and Catholicism, their very behavior is very Catholic, in my opinion.
Yes, I heard that. I thought that was extremely fascinating.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about his background. And I have to start, you know, I listened to his podcast for a while, and then I kind of stopped it because I was listening to way too many podcasts.
I understand that.
But I have to start listening to him again, him and Pizza Babe.
Yeah.
Because I think they're very real. You know, they do podcasts that are very real and raw sometimes, and I like that. Not all of my podcasts that way, but I like some of my podcasts to be that
way. I've never heard Pizza Babe, but yeah, Zillafag, he's raw.
he's out there.
I like him. He's a good guy.
He is who
he's
he
a
is.
Good guy.
Yes, he is a good man. I agree with you.
Okay, so let's get on to you. Are now a Quaker, okay? You've gone to the retreat. You've discovered that, realized that God loves you anyway.
Yes.
And at this point, are you still in New York, right?
Yes, I'm still living in Rochester, New York.
So how many years were you a Quaker in New York?
Only about 3 years, 2 or 3 years, because, no, it's about 2 years, because I got involved in about 86. Yeah, 86, about 3 years. And then I decided to leave. It wasn't, I didn't really connect with the people there, and I started going to a Unitarian church, a Universalist church.
Oh. Tell me about that.
That was actually the right thing. It was the right thing at the right moment. I was going to a Universalist church where they had an interim minister, and she was really, really more than happy to lambaste fundamentalist Christians from the pulpit. So, and also criticize Christianity. That's exactly where my head was at that point. And so I just basked in every sermon that she had to say about Christians, you know, criticizing Christians and how narrow-minded they are. And I'm going, amen, amen, you know. And they're a bunch of, you know, she was this shy of saying they're a bunch of assholes, you know. And I'm like, amen, amen, you know. I mean, she just basked in it. She just adored it. I mean, she just loved saying that. And I basked in it, I should say. But then I wanted to move on with my career, and so it was really a career move that changed things back for me. I moved to Albany to get my master's degree. I attended the local Unitarian church there, but it didn't quite work out for me. And I thought, you know what? I want something more mystical, so I decided to go to the Quaker church or Quaker meeting, and that's how I got. And then they were much different than the Rochester meeting. Because they quickly embraced me. Oh, who are you? And welcomed me and whatever. Now, an interesting case was I went back to the Rochester meeting to go visit. You know, I went back on vacation, holiday, to visit with my family. And I said, oh, I'll go to the Rochester meeting and tell them I'm going to the Albany meeting. And after the meeting for worship, several people approached me and said, where have you been? Why aren't you attending anymore? And, you know, I explained that I had moved. And one of them said to me, I get the feeling that we really were not welcoming enough to you, and that's part of the reason why you kind of slipped away. And I sat and I stood there and I said, yeah, that's part of it. But I was so impressed that they recognized that they had done that. I mean, it was very, wow. I was incredible that they remembered me, firstly. And secondly, one of them had acknowledged what they thought was going on with me. And I just thought it was very sweet. It was very kind. Quakers are really some of the absolute nicest people in the world. I mean, really, swear to God. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they can be assholes and jerks, and they're human beings, so I don't want to, you know, make them too high up there. But overall, they really try to be kind, and they really try to be fair and nice to people. And I like that. You know, that's why it's hard for me to leave on some level, because it is a nice thing about them. Mm-hmm. You know?
The Quakers are it's been my experience, too. The Quakers are very, very nice.
Yes.
And they're smart.
Yes, they can be very smart. Yes, absolutely.
Generally speaking. You know, they take education seriously.
They do. They've been that way for a while.
Yeah. A friend of mine, she's Jewish. She went to a Quaker school in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And she said it was the best education she's ever had.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's sort of, you know, when I think of Quaker, I think of serious and quiet.
Yeah.
But you said mystical, more mystical than well, of course, anything's more mystical than a Unitarian church. But the adjective mystical mystifies me. Because I think of, like, maybe Catholicism is mystical. So why do you say Quaker is mystical?
Well, there are different branches of Quakerism, firstly, and I've talked about that on the podcast.
Yeah.
And the branch that I was involved with are the unprogrammed branch. What that means is that they use the more traditional approach to worship, and that is they don't have a service. They literally sit in a room and wait in silence. Mm. Now, there are two forms of that. There's the conservative and the liberal. And the conservative means that they tend to be a bit more conservative theologically and a bit more conservative with their procedures. And liberals tend to be on the other side of that equation. But there's a lot of overlap between those two groups anyway. And so when you sit in a room for an hour, the experience, whether you're a theist, whether you believe in a god or not, the experience can be mystical in the sense that you're just sitting in silence. What do you do when you do that? Do you pray? Do you let your mind wander? Do you meditate using, you know, kind of more Eastern mystical kinds of things? Nonetheless, it has that kind of mystical transcendent. It can have that mystical transcendent quality to it. And so a lot of unprogrammed Quakerism has moved to that more mystical kind of quality. And in fact, there has been some overlaps with Buddhism. There's been some overlap with the more mystical versions of Catholicism and Anglicanism. So with Quakerism.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you'll go to a Quaker retreat center and you learned that, you know, one of the teachers is a nun and another teacher is a Buddhist monk and another teacher is a priest,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the rest are Quakers.
Yeah.
Because there is this overlap of mysticism within those traditions.
Okay. So you finally moved to California. And you moved
to California.
And you lived in L.A. all that time?
To Cali. Yeah, L.A.
Yep.
Yep.
It seems kind of odd that, you know, this, you know, ex-evangelical Quaker moves to, like, the city of sin. So what was your like moving there?
It's a perfect match. I love Los – I really like Los Angeles. There are things – now that I've been here long enough, there are things about it I don't like, as is true with other cities. But I like Los Angeles because – In some ways, it's very much like a Northeast city in its sensibility, and that is, it really has an edge to it. And some of the other cities, particularly San Francisco and Oakland, well, maybe more San Francisco, there's a lot of effort, or there was when my family was living there, there was a lot of effort not to have that edge. And to be very, it's kind of the quintessential liberal Quaker, or at least during the 70s and 80s it was. I think it's changed somewhat. But it's that quintessentially very liberal, open, you know, touchy-feely, you know, kind of experience. L.A. isn't like that. You know, there's some of that in L.A., but there's a real hard edge to L.A. too. And I like that because I tend to be somewhat hard-edged myself. I tend to be sarcastic. I tend to be ironic. Teresa is very much like that. And I appreciate that hard edge, mm-hmm. that somewhat hard edge. It's very – now, this is true with also with San Francisco, but L.A. is very, very mixed culturally. You know, there's just people from all over the world here. And even amongst the whites, the people of European descent, there's all these different – new European immigrants from Eastern Europe that are here now with a very different sensibility. I just love that. I love being in downtown, and once in a while you hear another person speaking English. Now, a lot of English speakers, particularly white English speakers, don't like that. They feel like another minority, but I like that. I like being just one more group in the mix. So I like that kind of thing here. I love the weather, despite the fact that, you know, we were frying for a few weeks ago.
Jeez,
literally, we were like in a frying pan. There are things about LA I don't like. But overall, I like
it. You're
LA.
Describing, you know, all the different types of people. You know, that's Boston's like that. It's like, you know,
many
minorities
like
instead of one majority.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, London was like that too, you know. It was just, there was just people from all over the world there. I just loved it. But most major cities nowadays are like that anyway. Mm. But I really learned to experience it in L.A. because I was living in smaller cities that were more monocultural.
So how's it getting around L.A.? I mean, I've never been to California. And so to me, it seems like such a big place. Like, it's not like Boston, right? You can walk from one neighborhood to the next, it's small, you know, much smaller than L.A. Yeah.
It's centralized.
Whereas, you know, L.A. just seems so large. I mean, are there areas, I mean, there's Watts and stuff. Is that the ghetto there, Watts?
Yeah, Watts is, some of it is very run down. A lot of it is actually a working class and middle class Latino and African American suburbs, neighborhoods.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that.
Most of L.A.?
No, of Watts.
Of Watts, yeah, okay.
Watts. Yeah, Watts. Most people know the main drags where it's very run down, but if you go off the main drags in Watts, you learn that there are all these neighborhoods that are very solid, working class, middle class, primarily African American or Latino. Mm-hmm. Working class neighborhoods.
So it's not as bad as one would think.
No.
Yeah. Harlem's like that too in New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You get the bad impression. So what about getting around LA? I mean,
LA is a challenge. This is the thing I don't like about Los Angeles. I've done both auto and public transit. I am one of the rare white middle class people who have actually gone without a car in Los Angeles, or have used the public transit system without reverting to a car for several months in a row. I just went through like a 6-7 month period without a car in Los Angeles while I was between cars. And when I first moved here, I primarily did public transit for about 2 years.
What's their system like out there? What do they have? Subway?
No, there's not a lot of subway. Most of the subway is downtown going north and east, not going west. The west part of the city has been very resistant to that, although that's beginning to change slowly.
Is that your area, the west side?
Yes, I'm on the west side, yes.
Okay. So where's Hollywood compared to you?
Hollywood is – let me see. I've got to think about that. It's east of me, northeast of me.
Uh-huh.
From downtown, it's slightly north and west.
Okay.
The other thing about Los Angeles – is that it's very spread out. That's not just Los Angeles City, but Los Angeles County.
Oh, yeah.
Is very, very spread out. It's all spread out. And, you know, I've often said that, you know, somebody says, you know, how far is it from North Los Angeles County to South Los Angeles County to drive that? And that could be 2-3 hours, depending on the traffic.
Wow.
That's from the highest point to the lowest point, yeah, or the most northern to the most southern. I had a friend who was, you know, wanted to go up to the route on Jill. She wanted me to meet her at Disneyland, and we were going to drive all the way through Los Angeles County to just slightly above it to where the Ronald Reagan place was, and she wanted to go visit that. And she says, "Can we do that? How long would that take?" And I says, "Oh, that could take anywhere between 1 hour to 3 hours, depending on traffic." Mm-hmm. And that's the same county.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's because it's just spread out, heavy, you know, heavy automobile usage, and it's just becomes more, there are just more and more people here as time goes on.
Wow, it just boggles my mind.
And that's the thing I don't like about Los Angeles. The other thing is that because things are spread out, it's tough to meet mm-hmm. people, and it's tough to form relationships and really develop friendships and relationships. I've had a tough time here, and I haven't liked that about LA. In fact, I've had an easier time meeting people through podcasting and blogging than living here in Los Angeles.
Wow.
Yes.
Are there, there's always bars and stuff, but are there no, community centers or?
There is a community center, but, you know, there are millions of gay mm-hmm. people here. And so it's easy to go to something and then go back, and it's a very different crowd that's there. Now, I have joined some groups that I have met some people. I'm a part of an Italian group, Italian interest group in the gay and lesbian community. I'm part of it. Like, there's a games group, and there are some people mm-hmm. I've met there.
So games?
Games, yes. Okay. Like board games mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I've done some of that. So I've met people through that. Through the Italian group and the Italian expat community, I've met some people that mm-hmm. have gotten to know. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
But that's taken me years to find that and to do that. The gay and lesbian Italian group doesn't publicize. It's all by word of mouth.
Oh, well, that's
so. Unless you know somebody, you don't know about it.
Wow.
And I didn't find out about it until 2 years ago.
And you've been there for 7 years, right?
I've been there for 7 years. That's right.
Yeah.
There's something to say about centralized and smaller communities where you see people over and over again, and it's easier to meet and then connect with people.
Yeah.
In a major city like this, especially when it's spread out like this, I think it's more difficult. It makes it more difficult.
Yeah, no, I can.
It's possible, but.
Yeah, well, there's more. You're not going to see them as frequently. It's not going to. Not the same people.
Yeah.
So, okay, tell us about your podcast. Where is it going? Where's it coming from?
Oh, I don't know. I started podcasting because of blogging. And I started blogging because of Teresa. And Teresa was the one who introduced me to blogging. I've been blogging for about a little over 2 years now. And the part about blogging that I had a little regret was that I didn't get into blogging when it first started. And I felt like I had kind of was behind the curve on it. So when podcasting came along, and I learned about podcasting through through Mainstream Baptist, which is a blog that I used to read through mm-hmm. Progressive Christian Blog Network, and he started a podcast, and I started listening to his podcast, like, it'll be 2 years now. It started like December of 2004, but he was the only one I really listened to, and I didn't have the iTunes or anything like that at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Teresa said, "You have to listen to Yeast Radio."
She heard it.
She heard it first.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded the pod. It was not iTunes at that point. It was Lemon Juice.
Yeah.
It was Juice, right? Lemon Juice,
yeah.
Right? So, and I listened to Madge Weinstein. And I was like, wow, this is great. And she had like this list of Q-Potters, and there was only like 5 people at that point. And so I said, you know what? I should do this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait. Do this. And so finally, it took me a few months to kind of get, you know, learn more about it. And in September of this year, it'll be a year of me podcasting.
Wow.
And that's how I started podcasting. And initially, it was going to be about Quakerism.
Yep.
And then I quickly felt that it was that kind of boxed me in thematically, topic-wise. I didn't want to be careful of using words like shit or fuck or, you know, things like that, because I knew some people might be offended by that. And I knew because of my blog, I had a lot of Quakers from different walks of life, from different branches of Quakerism that I had connected with. And so that's part of the reason why I ditched the Quaker thing, because I didn't want to get bogged in thematically. And the other reason was my own questions about it, my involvement with it. And then thirdly, I wanted to do something that was more like an audio journal. I wanted to do something that was more personal. I didn't want to try to compete with the big dogs, you know, that were doing these kind of, you know, like Feast of Fools, you know, or you know, Reagan Fox, who was doing, you know, this kind of, you know, entertainment story. Not story, but entertainment. It was very personal, but it was still very entertainment-oriented. You know, clearly he had worked on it. And I just didn't want to spend the time doing that, and I don't have the skills. That's not where my strengths lie. So I wanted to do something that was more personal, and then that's when I shifted to an audio blog. But as you rightly pointed out, it really hasn't changed all that much from what I was doing. I feel it's changed somewhat, but I think it's more how I'm doing it in my mind. But how I'm doing it, how it comes across, I don't think
well,
is that much
I think
different.
With your show is in the
yeah.
In the very in the beginning, up through I guess the beginning of this year, you would have these essays which sounded like they were written out and really produced, and it's excellent.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. But I think you said yourself that you know what, that's kind of tiresome.
Yeah, and I'll probably will do essays. You know,
yeah.
I've thought about
but
that.
But I like your style. You know, you're very succinct, clear thinker.
Oh,
and you
thank
say
you.
What you have to say and.
One thing that I learned from your podcast that I like about your podcast is that you would do these such eclectic topics. It was all the same podcast, and I would try to be thematic. It all had to be one theme. Now, I still do that at times, but I like the fact that you'd have the Brenda Starr, and then you'd have the opera, then you talk about Tab, then you do the ukulele, then it just went from one thing. It was like being in a bumper car, you know, it just went from one thing to the next, and I loved that.
Thank you. I
really, really enjoy that kind of thing. And now you're doing the, you know, you're showing how you abuse children by doing videos of children force-fed grasshoppers. I love that. And by the way, what's so wrong with a butcher knife in a still life? I love the butcher knife in a still life.
Thank you.
I love the fact. So what you? So okay. In the future, do some things about serial killers. Then this way, thematically, the knife can fit in a little bit better with the still life. But no, seriously, I loved the butcher knife with the fruit, the butcher knife, and the tab caps.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think I said this. The reason why I put the butcher knife in there was because in old these, you know, like I don't know if it's 16th century, but like the still lifes from 1700s or whatever, they had knives in them. If you look at go to the museum, there's always a knife in a still life.
You're right, but that makes too much sense. And the honesty is that it's like the Flatus show.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a butcher knife, sometimes you get a piece of fruit, and sometimes you get a can of tab. And it's the one, it's all the show. So that's how your still life works.
I guess it does come off that way. It's just a big knife.
I loved it. I loved that show. I loved the fact that it reminded, I think I try to comment. I don't know if the comment worked on your website.
Yeah.
But I said it reminded me of those old painting shows on PBS.
That's what I was trying to do. And
but then the subject matter was just a little skewed.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a little off. I loved that.
The next one I do is going to be like that even more, because I'm going to show my actual painting as I do it.
Okay.
But thank you for that.
Yeah. I enjoy your podcast. The podcasts I've enjoyed the most, which came out of Coup Powder, are the ones that are more personal and are just have a unique personality bent to it, and are intelligent and are consistent as far as coming out. I like people that are more consistent than non-consistent. Even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, I like something consistent. Yeah. So those are the podcasts that I've been loyal to, and I'm a loyalist. You know, once I stick to something, I'm like a piece of gum on the back of a shoe. You know, I just stick there.
Thanks.
You know,
so that's terrific.
It's a good analogy.
I do too. You talked about when you get involved with something, you really get involved with it.
Yes,
I do the same thing. I mean, yeah. I have recorders. I have a crap load of recorders. I still play the recorder, right?
But
when I was, you know, really into the recorder, I have 10 or so recorders.
Right.
It is. I think I'm a bit obsessive compulsive myself.
Yes. Oh, I'm obsessive compulsive.
Yeah.
I think that's why I can do a podcast.
It could very well be. I'd be interested to find out how it turns out, like the podcasting, you know, like how it evolves and how it becomes successful and stays. Because I really think that the personal aspect is the most important, and we'll see what it's like when you have, you know, like, you know, they become more commercial or what happens.
Well, I very early on in the podcasting, I did do a small essay about the difference between blogging and podcasting. And I think the big difference is that there are two things. It's not push button enough yet. Do you know what I mean by that? You know, Blogspot or Blogger really made blogging very push button. It's, you know, click, point, click, point, click, point, click. You're on the web. You're already podcasting. You don't have to know anything about the web at all other than just to follow their five-step simple directions. You know, and you're online. Podcasting isn't like that. It does take a lot more time to first get involved with it and then to produce it. I mean, it takes a lot of time. So I don't think it's quite as proletariat yet as blogging is.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I love podcasts that are more personal. Now, I do like some of the more professional podcasts that are out there. But let's take Project Runway, for example.
Is that a professional podcast?
A professional podcast. Tim, the designer, he's kind of the mentor for Project Runway.
Yeah.
He does the podcast. But you know how they do the podcast? He just talks about his personal impressions about the show.
That's it?
I love it.
Oh, it's
I love that. Okay. That he talks in real time what he thinks about the different contestants and what he thinks about what they're doing and his personal experiences with it. And he's a character, you know, I mean, you got to be a character to do some of this stuff too.
Mm.
And he's a character.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, you know, I just really appreciate that. But, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think podcasting has become very professionalized very quickly.
Well, yeah, if you look at iTunes, like the number 100, top 100s are like, you know, NPR podcast,
right,
which is just the radio program cut out
exactly
with an Acura, you know, wait, don't tell me. It's like, this is so and
right,
Peter Sagal, and this is wait, don't tell me podcast edition,
right,
brought to
right
you by Acura,
right,
blah, 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 you know, and then
right
it goes on
right
with the show.
Yeah. I mean, if there are radio shows or NPR TV shows that I really like and I want to listen to them, that's fine. But frankly, I don't want to download that into my hard drive because, you know, I can get that already.
Exactly.
I don't need that.
Exactly. There's nothing new to it.
There's nothing new. There's no new content to it at all.
I mean, any podcast, you really don't know what you're going to get on the next day, you know?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Wow. Interesting. So,
how do you like podcasting? You've been podcasting for more than a year now, right?
Yep. It was my first podcast. Actually, it's actually 1 year. It's the 21st is when I put up my first podcast. It actually could have been a little bit before that because I had technical meltdown. So it took about 2 months to learn how to do it.
And are you planning on continuing with podcasting?
I am. I love it. I really do. I really enjoy it. if there's a way of making some money to offset the costs, you know, that'd be great. But I don't. I'd have to get more listeners than what I have.
Right. Yeah, and it's me too.
Yeah, and it's grown. But I've also learned how to market myself better. Like I have different blogs, like LiveJournal and Blogger. Oh. So what I do is I just post my show on those as well as my, you know, regular blog, right? And so other people get to see it. I have a MySpace page. I really don't spend any time there.
Right.
You know, in fact, I never understood blogging, you know. I'm not the kind of person that just sit down and type out something.
Right. Well, and it may – yeah, go ahead.
So and so I was never – I really was interested in blogging, but I'm just not the kind of person that can sit there and type out something that looks as good as like a lot of people. You know, like a lot of people can do. So anyway.
Well, now that's interesting that you mentioned that about using LiveJournal, because I have started posting my stuff on my WordPress blogger account, and I get a lot of people listening to the podcast from that site.
Yep.
You know, they click on the link and they listen to it. They don't subscribe, but they do listen to individual episodes.
Do you have a link for a subscription on your thing?
I do have a link.
See, that's what I do. I have my show notes are basically the same thing every week. I just change the description, but I have a link for you know, if somebody wants to subscribe, you know, to do all sorts of things, buy a ukulele. So, though I'd make no money on that ukulele, but I did put the link up there because it's my favorite ukulele, and I saw it this place for $50 or whatever. So I thought, well, if anybody wants a ukulele, buy yourself a tenor. I don't know what the brand is. High low, and you know,
right.
Go there. I don't make any money from it, but I think it's a good instrument.
That's a good idea. Put I should do that. See, I got involved with blogging because I used to journal a lot. I kept journals for like 20 years. So blogging to me reminds me of that.
You're well written, Joe. I'm jealous of that.
Well written.
You write well. I mean, I've read some of your blogs.
Oh.
You speak well, and you know how to.
Thank you. That's kind.
You're a good communicator.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. And you play the ukulele great.
Oh yeah. Thanks.
I'll never. That's one of the reasons why. You know, when you did that podcast with the music, the Christmas music, I just loved it. I loved it. I just thought it was so – I thought, oh, this is adorable, you know. I don't know if you appreciate that kind of a – but I just thought, oh, this is great. I love it. I love it. So
I was surprised that anybody would, you know, would find it – I liked it, you know, for what it is, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like doing it because I like doing it, you know.
Exactly.
Not for any other reason.
Exactly.
Which makes me think I probably wouldn't. I'd probably continue doing it whether I made money from it or not.
Yeah, so. I you know personally, I'm not interested in making money right now.
Yeah.
I let me put it this way: I'm not interested in doing it full time.
Yeah.
Because as soon as something becomes full time, it is a job at that point, and it's a different experience. You know.
Well,
this is fun for me right now.
Yeah, I understand exactly. I wouldn't want it to be a full time thing. But there must be a way of reducing paying the bills, and of course probably have to just change my server and stuff like that, and not pay the mafia like I'm doing now.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah. So, is there anything else you want to tell the Flatus Show listeners?
Oh, just that. Thank you. Firstly, thank you so much for how many times you hawk the show. And you mentioned me on your podcast. It's so kind. You know, I don't do the same to other people.
That's okay.
I hardly mention anyone else on my podcast, but I really appreciate that you mention it as often as you do. Just, you know, I'm at bepe.lipson.com and bepepodcast@gmail.com and bepe.wordpress.com. You know, just type in Bepe and you're going to get
it's
me.
True.
You're going to get one of my sites. You'll get one of my
sites.
You
do a Google for Bepe podcast, and you'll find Joe G in no time.
That's
right.
Right
there.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. I've got it, baby.
That's true. I think if you fight Flatus Show, you get mine. But anyway,
you will get yours and WebMD.
Oh yeah, WebMD. You're right. There's even there, I did that once, and yeah,
opera. You get a little opera, ukulele. Yeah.
If you type in Flatisher, you get a link to this some invention that it's like reduces flatus in your drawers. Like a, it's like a flatus. It's like a charcoal filled pad that you stick up your ass to reduce the smell of flatus.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah,
that
muffles
sounds great.
The sound. Airize it, you know, odorizes it.
You should feel proud that that comes up when your show is typed into Google.
I think it's great.
Absolutely. No, it's not mundane at all.
Not at all. Okay, so, well, thank you, Joe. I think I'll let you get back to L.A.
Well,
and all the wonderful things.
Thank you so much. This is going to be one of your best shows.
That's what I say about every show. Every show is my best show. Keeps getting
yeah,
better.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, like wine.
Take care.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at Kenty@theflatusshow.com.